All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack dash helping Adam's family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Am I more than you bargained for yet? I've been dying to tell you anything you want to hear, because that's just who I am this week.
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete. And I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going, man?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. Got that big monster podcast just came out. And over the course of the next few weeks, I know I'll be getting takes from everybody shitting on my list.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought you brought a lot to the discussion and stuff.
Yeah, but you're still in the first half. Let me just say.
Yeah, no, I'm in the first half, yeah. So you might have driven it off the cliff for all I know without me guiding you and stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
But you never know. Well, I'm sorry. Go on, man.
Oh, no, that's it, really. I mean, otherwise, just gearing up for the new year. Wrestling shows. Already got 3 wrestling shows that I want to go to in January. Just got my tickets for PCW in the mail. I'm super excited for that, as I've got Thatcher versus Joe Graves number 2 for PCW on that show, and I've been really excited to see Joe Graves live, because I didn't get to the first PCW match, and he's a big guy in Premier, and I've been planning on going to the next Premier show for about half a year, it feels, and they just haven't announced the show, so I'm just like, okay, well, this is, you know, close enough. I got Gabriel Gallows as well. JR Kratos is coming out also to another show next month. So I'm getting some of the Premier flavor down here in SoCal, so I'm excited for that. And going to see the bad boy Joey Janela and Leo Rush down here as well. So
that sounds like fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a good time. But otherwise, that's about it. Just getting ready for more wrestling for 2017.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I have Wrestle Circus on January 14th. I might go to an ACW show on the 15th. Then I have the Evolve, NXT, and the Royal Rumble, where I have all tickets for, so in January. So, which could be Hero Swang Song. I know Hero's on it. I know the first night he's wrestling Zack Sabre Jr. I know Cobb's booked, but they really haven't really announced a card yet, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to be happening and stuff, you know?
No, for sure. I'm definitely looking forward to everything. I mean, especially now, I guess, maybe dip the toes in this water, but one of the guys that's supposed to be on that show may not be showing up, so the card might switch up, and that's kind of the man of the hour right now, Mr. 450.
Oh, is he booked on the show?
Yeah, he's supposed to be on the PCW show, technically, but we'll see if he can make it with that bum knee.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, like, we reviewed a Wrestle Circus in December, and one of his matches was May tape, and, I mean, we both... You could definitely clearly sell. We even mentioned it on that, and even all the way back in December, that his knee looked like it was fucked up. And
well, and that match was from early November.
Oh, is it early November? Oh,
that
wow.
That match was. We may have watched it in December because of the. By the
yeah,
time
it
hit
was
the
early November. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Oh, man. Yeah, that's how. Oh, yeah, I'm getting all confused. You're right. It was early November, and or at least mid November. And. Yeah, his knee was not in any shape to perform. I mean, did we give it a personal physical? No, but I mean, I'm a guy who played plenty of sports. I've been around a lot of stuff. I've had at least 6 six to ten concussions in my lifetime from playing football. So I mean, I know enough about athletics, and you know when a guy's hurt. And I mean, that guy, he come in for a couple spots in that one match that and is on and made tape, but you could clearly say he was favoring that leg, and then the next night, I mean, they did an injury angle to take care of him because he couldn't even perform. He won that match in the five way where he was supposed to get a title shot, and I mean, he hasn't come back. And is it because his leg's been injured? I mean, there's a lot of speculation, and it sounds pretty crappy if he's claiming he injured it right off the first spot of this match and trying to get fans to pay for it, even if fans are the ones starting the GoFundMe. It just seems pretty dishonest. What are your feelings on this?
Yeah, and I mean, okay, so I happened to be paying attention Christmas Eve to the Wrestling Circus Twitter as they were doing a Q&A just randomly on Christmas Eve. So that was, you know, a couple days ago, 5-6 days ago, or you know, in that range. And one of the questions was exactly about that. And like, I actually pulled it up right here, and it was, you know, December 24th. And it says, when is Mr. 450 coming back for his sideshow title match was the question. And the answer was, as soon as he's healthy enough to get back in the ring, his knee needs to recover. He's saying right there, his knee is still fucked up. That was on Christmas Eve, you know, yep. And then he had that match. What was it? Tuesday, the 28th, 27th.
Yeah.
And he's saying that he was cleared by the doctors and he got in there and blew out his knee within the first. And I mean, I can't blame him. I had a friend who, when we were, you know, partying and getting drunk and all this, he got in a fight with one of my other friends at our apartment. And he, you know, they were arguing back and forth and just having a disagreement. And he punched him in the face as hard as he could because the guy said, go ahead and just give me, take a free shot. And everybody had been drinking and he took a free shot, punched him in the face and broke his wrist.
Oof.
And then, so he waited, he went to work the next day, and he tripped over some boxes and pretended like he broke his wrist at work so that he could get disability and take time off to get it healed and taken care of by work, you know? And it's kind of like, yeah, that's really shitty, but when you're in that situation, I don't know if I can blame the guy. It's like stealing a loaf of bread or whatever to feed your family. It's kind of like, 450 may have thought, hey, if I can get WWE to pay for this, or if I can just get extra publicity from being on TV getting injured, maybe more people will help support and all this. And you can't blame the guy, but the GoFundMe, I don't blame him. Whatever, you're going to do the GoFundMe, that's fine. You want to disavow the GoFundMe and say that fans put it together, that's also fine. But there's another little wrinkle in the thing that I found interesting is that I saw PCW, you know, funnily enough, my local indie out here that has him booked at the end of the month, the promoter from PCW donated $500 to the GoFundMe just today. So, I mean, that feels like that was supposed to be his payday for the show. And yeah, he's giving it to the GoFundMe that supposedly Mr. 450 has nothing to do with and doesn't want anything to do with. Sounds to me, or, you know, if I'm making an assumption, it goes like the promoter says, hey, I saw you on TV. I know you're not going to be able to make it, but we're still going to pay you because we just feel like it's right because you're injured, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, how about this? Send it to the GoFundMe so it looks like people are donating money to me so that I'll get more donations. You know, it's like put a little bit of change in your cup when you're busking and you're more likely to get more money. But if you have an empty cup, people don't want to be the first one to give you a dollar because they don't want to be the first sucker, you know, and that's just kind of what it looks like to me. And I don't blame the guy. Again, no shame in his hustle. The guy is an independent wrestler. He's living his dream. He's doing what he can. But sometimes it's like when you're getting caught red-handed, you have to just come out and admit the truth and, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he is being completely honest and maybe we're wrong, but I know that he was injured in the early November. I know it's kind of interesting that he was still injured up until New Year's Eve. And then, you know, miraculously he has his first match back in WWE and he gets injured within the first few seconds of the match. It just seems interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, it was clear as day. I mean, the dude's leg was messed up. I mean, he was limping around at the meet and greet. You could tell people were helping him get from A to B. He was clearly carried and protected in that match. You even mentioned when we first reviewed the match how it looked like you were cringing because it looked like he was going to take this super spot, but they rerouted it and went to somewhere else. You remember that?
Yeah, it was a big Tower of Doom, and Jordan Lennox cut it off, and then he ended up taking the Tower of Doom and got Mr. 450 out of the ring. And then
yeah.
he came in with a straight leg tornado DDT to win the match. He popped in on his good leg. He kept yep. his other leg completely straight. Hits a tornado DDT on Bolt Brady. Or is it yep. Brady Bolt? I think it's Bolt Brady, right? I keep getting that
it
one
is. Yeah, you were good on Brady Bolt all the time. Yeah, but Bolt Brady to the rest of the world. Brady Bolt to
Brady
you.
Bolt to me. But yeah, he comes in and hits Bolt Brady with the tornado DDT on one leg and wins the match. And it was very obvious that he was not involved in a lot of big spots, especially for a guy like Mr. 450, who's known for his flying.
Yeah, and then he didn't work the next day. I mean, he did an injury angle right off the bat to get rid of him. In the, he was supposed to be in a three-way with Guevara and Mustafa Ali, and they got him out of that match, so it became a singles match. So, it was clearly he was not feeling good, not feeling it, because you know what? When promoters pay somebody, they don't like to do injury angles at shows, you know?
No, of course not, especially when they paid the guy. I mean,
yeah, paid him and brought him in and flew him out.
And that's the other thing too, is I hate to say it, and I mean it's cool that he's, you know, trying to make towns and be a good brother and feed his, you know, maybe feed himself, feed his family. I don't know his life situation, but I also feel like it's fucked up to go all the way to the show and fly and everything you said. I mean, the promoter paid for that plane ticket. They may or may not be able to get reimbursed if they tried to return the flight. But when you show up and you show up injured and you say, hey, I'm not going to be able to do this, that, and the other, it's like, God, man, it's like, I don't know. And then you're jipping the fans somewhat because they expect something. I mean, I know it kind of sucks to say that because card subjects have changed. But when you show up and you're Mr. 450 or you're Ricochet or you're Will Ospreay and you show up and you're, you know, 5-10% or even 20-30%, the crowd's gonna just like, you're kind of jipping them. They paid that ticket to see you, and it's I know it's kind of stupid, but it's the Ric Flair thing, and I just heard it recently on someone else where he said when he was a kid, if he went to go see Ray Stevens and Ray Stevens didn't do the flip in the corner, he felt like he got ripped off, you know. And it's still the same thing.
You know, it's an interesting story to follow, because our boy Rover's sniffing it out right now, and that guy's a dog with a bone, so he's smelling something. And I mean this in a, 'cause this is a compliment, not an insult. That guy, it'll be all over it until the truth is exposed. God bless him. I'm glad he's never arrested me if he was a police officer. but hey, let's move over. You want to go Russell Circus, the two matches that made tape?
Let's talk about these bad boys, because I enjoyed both matches quite a bit.
Okay. Yeah, man. I talked about this last week or the week before. I was at the show live, and well, they released two matches. Let's look at Sammy Guevara versus Colt Cabana. I mean, we both on the same. You're now on firmly on the Sammy Guevara bandwagon, even though he didn't make your top 50. I mean, shame on you. that's on you. Thank gosh for Quinn and the flying the flag. I said this was Colt Cabana's best match that I saw this year, and I'm still sticking to that, man. What's your feelings of the match, and do you think I was full of shit or full of hyperbole?
Nah, you got it. I mean, Colt Cabana, it's Colt Cabana, so it's not really saying much, but I don't think I've seen him have anything quite this good, and luckily he hasn't, I guess he did have that, the kind of blow-off match with Dalton Castle at Final Battle, but
and he had, I don't think that came close to this. Zack Sabre Jr. match I thought was pretty good. You didn't like it that much, though, I don't think.
I didn't like it as much as you, but I would definitely like it for what it was, I guess. But, I mean, I think we both like World of Sport, but I kind of expect something more, especially right now from Zach. He's having a year where he needs to, I think. He's definitely on fire. I mean, the thing is he was like my number three wrestler of the year in that range, number three or four, and it's kind of
I think I had him two, if I'm not mistaken.
And I want to have him at number one, so I'm just kind of like wanting prove it to me. And when he's doing a World of Sport comedy-esque match with Colt Cabana, it's not proving it. But right here, Sammy Guevara did such a good job of playing with the comedy of Colt while keeping his character, which is exactly what I want in a good comedy match, which is that Sammy was always a cocky asshole, and he just was letting himself be the butt of the joke for Colt. But he was never in on the joke. He was always, you know, serious and pissed off. And every now and then, sure, he would be mocking Colt, but he was also mocking the crowd. And he wasn't like, hey, isn't it funny I'm doing these things to him or I'm being an asshole? No, it was always like, no, 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 fuck you and fuck him, which I just love. He's just so, so good at that. And yeah, like from the beginning when Colt is chasing him around in the collar and elbow tie-up and he keeps trying to push Sammy into the ref and the ref is running all around. And as soon as it's done, Sammy is just pissed off and gives him the finger. And I'm just like, that's so great, you know. The shoulder blocks back and forth with Sammy just obviously, you know, super pissed off that he has to be smaller. It's just, he refuses to accept his size, and I just love it. He's like, no, fuck that. I'm going to run through this guy. There's no way he can stop me. And there's sometimes when you do these shoulder block spots and you go like, what are they thinking? Why are they going with it? But with Sammy, you get it. And like, yeah, at least for me and his performance, I get it because he really believes he's going to do it. Like, he believes, I'm going to knock him down. Doesn't matter if this guy weighs like 100 pounds more than me. I can knock him down. And that's just, it comes through in his attitude and his swagger. And I just thought it was great. The Chicago City skyline near fall was amazing. I really bought into that huge, and I just thought that was lots of good stuff here. And I thought Sammy was nice as he's kind of going after as Colt is kind of fighting off of his back foot and Sammy keeps going at him. I really enjoyed that as Colt Cabana just seemed like he was kind of running, and I thought that was good. Sammy just constantly has a bad attitude and going at a super unbelievable fast pace. And I just loved that, like, it kind of felt like his bad attitude was actually a mind game. And he just kept kind of like, Colt is trying to be fun loving, you know, I'm just here to like entertain the crowd. And because Sammy kept having a bad attitude and kept being a dick and not kind of playing along with him, eventually it kind of like made Colt kind of buy into it and fall for the trick. And it gave Sammy the opening to take over on him, which I just thought was so great. And like just such a nice subtle bit of psychology in the match that I thought was good. I thought just lots of really great stuff. The Billy Goat's curse for the rope break was amazing, but I liked it, but I thought it kind of sucked that the crowd was really firmly like popping huge for Sammy getting the rope break there.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish that the crowd was just hot and angry. You know, I thought that was like probably my only issue with the match. But I love Sammy's kind of new super kick to the back of the head as being his setup for the 6:30. It really works with his shitty attitude, that he would be the kind of guy that would kick somebody in the back of the head like that, you know, to set up his finisher. It's just everything about Sammy Guevara's work and his character just fits perfectly to a T. I give this 3.5 stars. I mean, there's only so much you can do with Colt Cabana, but Sammy Guevara, Jesus Christ, this guy is like, the breakout star of the year. And I did have him at 51. He didn't make my top 50. I'm kind of shocked that he did make, you know, QT's top list, as I feel like I kind of showed him to QT after you showed him to me.
Yeah,
so I was really impressed.
Let's make sure we got the order right here, the pecking order here.
Yes.
Okay. I gave it 3.5, too. I live, I thought it was 3 3/4, verging in on 4, but watching on tape, it was 3.5. But man, my favorite part of this was how both guys took their styles and meshed it together to have a pretty fun, cohesive match. And meshing with Colt's style can be pretty damn hard to do sometimes. And what Sammy did here was just fantastic. The early part was all Cabana shtick, and so his shine was all Cabana stuff. And that was fun, you know? And then they worked some fun spots, and I thought Colt's shine was pretty fun, but totally Colt. But then finally Sammy's getting some heat. I loved how Sammy learned from the first stop spot in the match. First he falls for it, but now he wasn't gonna fall for the second time, and Colt, and he gets a revenge spot on Colt, which I liked. I liked the Billy Goat curse exchange. I thought it was well executed, and I thought it had a lot of the crowd. I thought the crowd was, there was a lot of people screaming tap, 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 tap. But the crowd was definitely a Sammy crowd because, they see the guy here. Oh, I'm in Texas, in this area, in Austin a lot, and the dude's a heel, but man, he's so damn entertaining. So it's like they want to boo him, but they want him to become a mega star also. So it's like weird, a real weird dichotomy when it comes to dealing with the guy. But man, Yeah, I mean, I'm still on record. This is definitely Cabana's best match this year that I've seen. And Sammy Guevara, elevated Cabana. I mean, Cabana's a big star, and Sammy Guevara was the straw that stirred this drink, and really just had a freaking hellacious match with Colt Cabana. I mean, it was this was buried, not buried, but it was like the fourth match on the show, I think, something like that, and they almost stole the whole entire show. But speaking of match of the night, man, what were your thoughts? This wasn't even the main event. This was the third match from the top. Hero versus ACH. What were your feelings here?
This is really interesting to me because you're going to the Wrestle Circus shows and I'm not. But it feels like it's almost maybe a marketing ploy on their part to create buzz for the company that they're putting out these matches for free on YouTube, but these aren't the main events, and it almost feels like they're trying to be like, oh, you know, we save the main event stuff for the pay when people have to pay for the stuff. But it's also like the smart marquee stuff that'll get internet buzz.
Yeah.
It's like the Hero ACH, Sammy Guevara matches that they're putting out that are like the mid-card match. So then I just worry that when they do put out the full shows, like the main event stuff has been like EC3, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't know if for me and for the crowd that's getting all buzz for Wrestle Circus, if we really realize that when these shows come out, the stuff that we're missing is kind of the Gaga stuff. So we'll see how that goes once it comes out. I don't know. Like it's kind of an interesting situation that they kind of have right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on record, right? Thought EC3, I mean, he won the title in a four-way, which I thought was a fun match. But then he did it was pretty much a gimmick match on the second show. And then he did a main event with Pentagon Jr. And that was really short. And it was no DQ. But it was a really short match on a long show where I know some other people, it wasn't me, I believe I was on record and said it was around 6 hours, the show, and they had a stop clock where it was like 5 hours and like 27 minutes or something. Around 6 hours is not an exaggeration. Yeah. If you count in, the start time was supposed to be 5:30. I said, again, I didn't have a time clock with me. I just said the show was supposed to start around 5:30. I left at 11:45, so I didn't say 6:15. I said around 6 hours. And that was the last match, and it was a pretty much not 80% of it was comedy. And EC3 is not a independent worker in a way. He's a guy who needs television to get over because that's his shtick. Working on an indie show, it just doesn't work as well if you're only doing it once a month type of thing. His character needs time, and it just doesn't feel right. I mean, it'd be one thing if we had a big booking plan and you were getting weekly TV and you needed him to cut promos and this and that. But on a week, but on a show, on a, you know, a promotion that runs once a month, it just doesn't work with him on top. But I mean, it's not all about EC3. I mean, there's still plenty of great matches on the show. So, I mean, these just happened. I thought these were the two best matches on the show, but there was a lot of other good matches too. So,
yeah, no, and for me, I love watching full wrestling shows, too, so it's like, I would much rather watch the entire show either way, but I just thought that's
I'm wondering if they're going to end up with a streaming service. I would assume, but I don't know. I really don't know.
I've heard some rumors. But I'll wait till it comes out to see what they actually do, because I don't know if I buy it, realistically, what I hear people saying they're doing. This match, I really, from the beginning, I liked ACH with the King ACH or the King of Texas thing, and I almost was thinking, how awesome would it be if he kind of did the Jerry Lawler shtick in Texas?
Yeah.
He was the King of Texas.
Yeah,
because I think that ACH could pull something like that off. Like, honestly, he's super over in Texas.
Charisma.
Yeah, and they do 5 minutes of pre-match just playing with the crowd, and the crowd loves it. You know, before it starts, I'm just like, this guy could totally get over. He's really charismatic, I think. He really does cut an old school territorial babyface promo. You know what I mean? That's like ACH's kind of bread and butter when it comes to promoing. He's not the guy, he's not slick in like The Rock or something, but he can definitely you know, be kind of down homesy and folksy and get the crowd into it. And yeah. He's a little weird and he's into anime and you know what I mean? And so it's just
video
like,
games, yeah.
Yeah, just like kind of the perfect guy that people would get behind. So I think that's really interesting. I'd love to see him kind of grow as an independent performer now after his kind of little bump on the scene in ROH. We'll see where he goes from there. But
Are you interested in seeing his documentary they're shooting right now?
I will definitely watch it, and I'll see how that goes, because he's definitely has become a kind of polarizing figure. I mean, he's got a lot of baggage, as people talk about his behind-the-scenes antics, and that he acts too much like a kid and all this, and it's sometimes that can be endearing, and sometimes it can be grating, and if you edit the film right, you can kind of, you know, see both sides, or you can only see one side, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, once the match itself gets going, Chris Hero is, he's turned into like the old man grappler with his grunting and his facial expressions as he's working this arm, this really stiff arm wringer, to start out on ACH. And he's making me think of like Killer Kowalski and Stu Hart trying to stretch young boys, you know, as he's,
our friend, my buddy Lost Charles from Pro Wrestling Only. He says, and he's like always wondered, cause like Meltzer always compares Hero to Johnny Valentine, which is a pretty damn impressive compliment.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, yeah, that's huge. And, like, I could definitely kind of see that. He comes across with a certain kind of gravitas. And, yeah, one thing I could have done without is Chris Hero gives ACH the fist bump on the kip up off of early on. And then from there, he goes into the dismissive kind of shoulder block no sell. And I was kind of like, I wish that he didn't break the fourth wall thing there. Like, you're giving him kind of respect on the fist bump, but then you're turning right around and like being like, oh, I didn't see you there, or I didn't feel you bump into me. So that was a little ugh, but whatever. And then ACH gets going, and Hero with just the perfectly placed cut off from a charge with just a big boot to the face, and it's just, oh my god, it's so nice. And then the way that ACH kind of, he does the Roddy thing where he goes like instantly into like fifth gear from selling his ass off to being like just all over the place, boom, 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 big attacks. But Hero is so smart that he hits the floor instantly. And I just love that. He doesn't give ACH a chance to get rolling, because you could tell that he's steamrolling. You know, he's getting going early on. So I love that again. And once more, Hero with just a dismissive right cross puts ACH on the ground, and the crowd just applauds huge for him. And it sucks, because I mean, there was a time when a closed fist punch was something that a heel, you know what I mean? It's kind of a heel thing, and the way that he did it, and it's to the King of Texas and all this, and the crowd would have just lost their minds and boo this fucking asshole, but they pop huge for it there. And it's another one where I'm just like, I mean, maybe I was just born in the completely wrong century or something. I feel like I should have been going to the shows with the guys in the suits and hats, you know, and like watching Red Bastine in black and white, but somehow in person, he's black and white still, or Gorgeous Georgia.
Right.
Because I'm just like, I want to hear the crowd get fucking mad at Hero there. It felt like that was such an asshole thing to do to your hometown boy. And then
That's because the heat's different now. You know, more people are into how athletic the match is, and this or that. So the way everything's worked nowadays, that is just the only place you're gonna find that is at CWF Mid Atlantic. But go,
yeah, go no, on. Exactly. And and then Hero's just talking trash, and he's even talking trash to the crowd, and ACH just seems like he's thinking like, He can get going with some big fancy flipping stuff, but he gets caught instantly on his feet, and he catches his, or actually he goes for like a big flip as he's finally going, and he catches his feet on the top ropes and lands on his fucking face, and then he thinks he's gonna pop up, and then Hero is just right there with a big ass boot and knocks him out on his ass. And I fucking love that, because it's like, he's not the king no more, is he? You know what I mean? And I just kind of...
And live, that's where he bloodied up ACH's mouth right there.
Yeah, because he landed, I mean, obviously you buy it off the big boot, but he probably bit his lip when he fell from fucking catching his feet on the top rope. But I just thought that was so good. They won't boo Chris Hero no matter what. Like, it's just not going to happen. ACH with the, I loved as he hits the kind of code breaker into the Midnight Star, and Hero grabs that cravat for the cravat suplex. And I thought that was just a great near fall. Just so awesome. And then Hero catches ACH on a dive with like ACH's head at his shins, And I was just like right at his knees. I'm just like, this is not safe. And you can almost, I think I could hear someone in the crowd saying that it's not safe. And he just kind of says, fuck it. And he pile drives him. And I'm just like, oh my God, he broke his neck. Like, there's no way he didn't, you know, fucking kill him there. Towards the middle and end of the match, it really felt like it kind of started to fall apart. And stuff just was like, it was starting to stretch out. And then they did a fake injury angle thing with Hiro pretending like he was hurt, but he wasn't. But he gets caught with a counter of the suplex into the Brainbuster to set up the Midnight Star, and it's over. And this match was on such a great road, and then it just kind of fell apart at the end, and I thought that the finish was a little convoluted, but I gave this one 3.5 as well. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was well on its way, but that finish was just a little bit too clunky for me.
Okay, I went 4.25 live, and I still stuck with 4.25. I really liked it. I loved the grappling early. I loved Hiro getting the more heelish and more bully like as the match progressed. I liked the cheap shot spot. Gets a pop every time, and he did here. I liked ACH getting that nice little flurry. I thought ACH did a great job selling an ass beating like no other. I love Hiro's heat segment where there was a legitimate heat segment he's getting. This felt more old school with the heel controlling the comebacks and the timings. And I thought it was great. We'd see ACH get a little bit of hope spots and get cut right off immediately. I just so love the whole aspect of that. I liked how Hiro covered that blown spot where ACH you know, normally lands on his feet, but here his feet hit the top rope and he fell, and Hiro was right on it. Bam. He was like, I mean, obviously the rest of us who've watched enough ACH knows that was a blown spot, but man, to the crowd, they probably had no idea. I guess Hiro was so on point on covering for it. And then that karate spot, I thought with the karate plex was amazing. I liked when ACH had the crown on late in the match, and Hiro fucking knocked him silly, and the crown goes flying off. I mean, there were some great visuals. Yeah, it got a little clunky down the stretch, but man, I thought the match was just too damn good to let it be denied. And I was a little bit more forgiving of the finish because of how much of all the physicality involved in the match, because it was really, really physical and stuff, and I absolutely loved it. I'm assuming you saw me marking out big time in the front row. And,
oh yeah,
yeah, I'm going bananas. And when I say I was like Meltzer at the '89 Chi-Town Rumble, I honestly think I was like him. It's fucking ridiculous, just going absolutely nuts. But man, another great match in Heroes. Wheelhouse, I think this might have been ACH's one of his best matches this year easily. You think that's fair?
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I mean, I was at like 3.75 before, and like just looking back on it, I think I kind of downgraded it a little bit, maybe. I don't know, but the finish and the false injury was the only problem, but ACH was phenomenal in here. Chris Hiro was amazing in here. Yeah, it was just a really good match.
Yeah. All right, man. That was Wrestle Circus, the top two matches they released. Let's go over and look at Ring of Honor TV, which was their tour of England. Man, I enjoyed the show overall. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good, you know, through and through as kind of a real quick refresher on the British or the UK tour with a heavy focus, I think, on Ospreay and Scroll, obviously, as being the big deals for the UK tour and the big deals coming out of the UK tour for the future of ROH. So I thought that they did a good job in that regard. And I don't know if you watched any of the UK tour or even the matches that were on this show off of the VODs at all, or if you just watched this TV.
I watched both, so.
Okay.
And I kind of thought it was funny. We got this show, and then NXT gave us a show from Japan, kind of doing the same exact thing, you know?
Right. And it was, to me, it's kind of funny because, you know, ROH obviously cut everything down and it felt like NXT went, like, for an extra long episode. You know what I mean? It was kind of interesting in that regard, too, the way that they treated it.
Yeah. But we opened up with Bobby Fish and Ospreay. Wait, what'd you think of the match?
The match itself was really good. I think, again, I mean, obviously it's heavily edited, but I thought... My only issue is it felt like such a waste to just have Bobby Fish drop the title when he's just getting going here. The match itself was done really well. Bobby Fish, obviously, with decent leg work and kind of focusing on that, but Ospreay just being too much and obviously young, fast, and takes him over. But again, I think the finish was a little, obviously, they're trying to protect Fish, and then he's not even in the, you know, the big match on the pay-per-view to try to get his title back after it gets traded a couple times. And yeah, again, I just thought that it kind of sucks. I get why they wanted to do this, but it just, to me, it kind of sucks that they kind of cut Bobby Fish's title reign short. And then this match, again, was, I mean, I watched the full version, and the match on the TV just kind of, not that it didn't do it justice, but it really felt like a highlights package focused on Will Ospreay instead of kind of giving you a flavor of the whole match if you're going to edit it down for TV. So that's my biggest issues. But if you saw just this, it definitely does the job of making sure that you see that, you know, Ospreay is a player going forward. He gutted it out and he was able to kind of sneak out through the back door to get the win. And Bobby Fish still feels strong because he didn't get, you know, decisively beaten. So I can't complain about it too much.
Yeah, now, what did you see? Did you see just the TV, or did you watch anything?
No, I watched both.
Okay. I'm going off my video on demand notes, and I really liked this. I thought it was like a 4.25 legit star match.
Yeah.
I love Fish after the arm, and Fish working the arm. It's very detailed. This is a strong match that highlights actually both guys' strengths. We got... which was great because we got Fish really working on top for a lot of the match, giving Ospreay some hope spots, but all his hope spots were just amazing, really great high spots. So we didn't need Ospreay to have to carry it with his high flying. We just got enough to get a taste of how great Ospreay, or got a taste of what Ospreay's strengths are. And I thought Fish was really the master here, and I thought Will Shine was freaking great. He did that space flying tiger driver, which was amazing. He did such a great job of, he didn't do enough, didn't do like bazillion high spots, but the ones he did, you remember. So I thought they worked this match really smart, and I thought Fish was really a maestro here in the layout of this match, because I felt it was perfectly worked in the sense that, yeah, Fish got the loss and lost the title, but he seemed like he dominated the most of the match, and Ospreay looked good because I was a match they helped both guys, where Fish still looked like he should have the title because he dominated, but Ospreay won the title, so he deserves it and did enough to win, and we got a taste of what Will Ospreay was all about. And I actually thought this was the best match on the whole TV program today on Ring of Honor. What do you think of the Bucks versus Ospreay and Skrull?
Just obviously wild bomb throwing all the way through, I thought that the Bucks did a good job of really healing, doing a lot of heel work here and not, I mean, obviously a lot of times they play a little bit too cute to the crowd and trying to get them to pop, but I thought that they were solidly heel here, especially because the setting where they're in England and they know that Ospreay and Skrull are going to be so much, you know, so over to the crowd.
Local baby faces, finally we get a place where the Bucks are actually booed, or we're going to get over like they did, and it really helped the dynamic, I'll say that much.
Yeah, no, and I think that Skrull did a good job here playing a little cheeky and having fun, and it's so funny because Skrull, you know, is being pushed as a heel everywhere, and he's even a heel in ROH, but he's got natural likability that Ospreay doesn't have.
Yeah,
and some of that was rubbing off in this match, where, like, I was kind of liking Ospreay more because he's having Skrull with him kind of playing around and joking, and especially when he mocks his kind of little pose as Skrull just kind of runs the ropes and does the pose. I just thought that was so great. And, yeah, having Skrull kind of be the heavy of the match was interesting as well, especially because, I mean, Matt Jackson is no joke. He's a pretty strong dude, but you kind of had Skrull playing the technical guy. He's working over the fingers. he's working a little bit more of the power stuff, and Nick Jackson just gets no credit for how fucking smooth he is. I mean, the flawlessness as he hits, you know, it's a spot that he does every fucking match, and it's a spot that I remember at PWG shows years and years ago chanting, you know, same old shit, too, where he does the over-the-top facebuster into the slink through the ropes onto the moonsault to the floor. But he does it so smoothly with so much fucking finesse, and just the guy is like, I don't know, he's something special, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for how amazingly smooth of a high flyer he actually is. Like, people don't think of Nick Jackson in the conversation as Ricochet, Will Ospreay, but he's goddamn good as a flyer, you know? And the Bucks, yeah, just being heels, being pricks here, and then, I mean, they do the springboard counter on the Meltzer driver two separate times throughout the match, and both times, like, the first one was, you know, kind of whatever as he dives in with the cutter that almost looked like it was a little bit off kilter, but the second time where he comes in with the Super Rana and still gets, you know, into the Meltzer driver is just fucking amazing. Like, how do you pull something like that off? That was just spot of the decade, really.
Yeah, but I thought it was very masturbating.
Masturbatory, yeah.
And stuff. It was like almost like impossible. Like, I'm like, the stars would have to align for that thing to happen in real life. You know what I'm saying? I think that's almost like having to pull four aces in a row, or four jacks in a row, or four. I mean, the numbers for that to happen in real life are astronomical. For me, that hurt the match. I mean, that was cool. It was just like, okay, really. But it was good. I enjoyed this, but I really, there was a lot of stuff I didn't like, like mostly towards the finish. Like, I didn't like the whole umbrella shit, and I thought Ospreay's face on the whole umbrella stuff was just stupid, and knowing the super kick party was coming was dumb, and I thought the finish was very, like, you know, total ego driven and trying to do this cool spot instead of a spot that actually makes sense. I'm not a big fan of super spots when they don't have any type of logic or sense or any way in real life this could happen type of way. And I just couldn't. It was just total, like, eye rolling experience for me. What do you think of the final match, Ospreay and Willie, the villain?
I think for me it was honestly the weakest match of the show. It's definitely the weakest match of their series together. And I think it was probably the weakest match of the TV show.
You thought it was the weakest match of their series? I still think WrestleCon was much worse.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think of that one. It's so fucking bad. You're right. It's definitely better than the WrestleCon match.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I guess I wasn't considering that one just because of how bad it really was. And now that you brought it up, it reminds me. Yeah. So, I guess it was on the lower end of the spectrum from them. But, I mean, it's not terrible, but they've just had such great matches, and you can't blame them. Again, it's just like the Bobby Fish match, and especially on the TV version, because I'm going more on my review of the TV version than on the review of the VOD version.
Fair enough, yeah.
And, like, the Bobby Fish match, as you said earlier, it kind of saved a lot and really make you feel like there could be stuff down the road with both guys protected. And it was similar with this. It felt like they saved a lot. They really didn't turn up the intensity to full, to, like, all the way. And that may not be a bad thing because these guys have a future of a big feud in ROH. But, yeah, I just, again, and as you brought up the umbrella stuff from the tag match, which I think was the night before, like, I felt like the umbrella stuff was part of what I was talking about of stuff that's fun about Marty Scurll that was bleeding over to making Ospreay a little bit more likable, which is saying something there. But then in this match, as you have, Ospreay being kind of an asshole, it's just something about Ospreay. Like, I know he's trying to be defiant, but when he's giving the kind of two-finger salute to Marty Scurll, to me, he comes across like a dick because he just kind of is a dick, and less of that, like, oh, I should get behind him because he's plucky. And then from there, just having, I mean, as I said, it felt like they saved stuff for the future match, but the finish also felt like it really dominantly put over Scurll. So it's kind of like, I don't know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, where it feels like you kind of went one way, but not completely. Because I felt like it was a really dominant finish where it looked like Marty Scurll just put him out, but it also felt like they didn't go full bore in the match. Which I guess you could protect and say, well, if Ospreay turns it up and goes full bore in the next match, he could beat him. But I feel like you don't have such a dominant finish in the match if you want to build to future matchups. But yeah. But all in all, I mean, obviously these guys just have dynamite in-ring chemistry, and the match is a lot of fun, and the crowd is super hot for everything they do, so you can't really, or at least I can't really complain about it, and I did have a good time, and like I'm happy for both guys because I think that this is the start of a bigger push forward for both of them.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I enjoyed the match. I liked it better than the tag match. I mean, I'd probably give it like 3.25, 3.5, but it is, but nothing really, really stood out to me on what they were doing. Like nothing really like, wow, that was awesome. Or that was neat. You know, it felt kind of very paint by the numbers for them. And you knew they could do a better match. So it wasn't like they were disappointing. And I can understand trying to save it for a pay-per-view or for something, but yeah, it just, and they knew they were going to have the crowd since it was their home crowd, so maybe that was maybe some of the thought process behind it. But it just, you know, they didn't feel like they, you know, they're clearly positioned in last because they thought they were going to hit a home run, and all they did was really hit a double, you know.
No, yeah, and I can definitely see that. And again, as I said, if you're gonna save stuff for the next match, then you should have done a finish more like the finish in the Bobby Fish match, where it came across a little bit cheap, but you know, he got it out. He didn't cheat, but he got it. But this match, it's like the heel drops down his gimmick and just, you know, chokes him out and kicks the shit out of him as he's, you know, beating him with his move. And it's kind of like, well, I mean, could he have just cheated? You know, I mean, he's a heel anyways. Could he not have just cheated? And then you say, okay, the next match will go crazy and it'll be no DQ, and you know, and then go on from there. But I don't know. It did feel like they were holding back in some ways and not in other ways. And it's just kind of an odd thing to me to do that from a company that tends to do a good job of protecting everything that way and not kind of doing stuff like this.
Yeah, I'm with you. Overall, though, I thought it was a fun show, good TV show that highlighted their new talents that they just acquired. So I think for that, it's a win, you know?
Yeah, and that, it sells the VODs. They did a good job on that because it makes me kind of, if I didn't already have them, I would go like, oh, I want to see all these matches and all the other matches that happen on the UK tour in full, you know?
For sure. Well, hey, why don't we take a break here? We'll listen to some messages from the boys over at Pro Wrestling Only and then A Place to Be Nation, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on The Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, The Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's blog, A Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and we're going to be looking at some NXT action all the way from Japan. And it opens up with Oney Lorcan versus Cian Almas. Wow, all I know is I can just say I was blown away in the fact that the finish. I could not believe that they put Lorcan over. I don't know if that means anything in the history, in the future of Arsene Almas, or because I know there's been talk about how he didn't really hasn't been really enjoying his time there. And first it was because he was mismatched as a babyface. Now he's gone, he's heel. But I was actually shocked they went with this direction. Maybe they're building something up for the special. I don't know. But it just seemed weird, especially Almas coming off that four-way where he was in the contendership for a shot at Nakamura's title. What do you think of the match and the finish in general?
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying about the finish. I was 100% shocked on the finish just because of the way that Oney's been treated since he's gotten to NXT. He's felt like cannon fodder as he even showed up on 205 Live to job to Kalisto, or was it SmackDown? He showed up on SmackDown to job to Kalisto. And they just haven't really pushed him serious. But he's a guy that when he first showed up there and the writing was on the wall that Finn Balor was leaving, I said, what they need to do is just put the belt on Oney Lorcan first thing, because he can work a believable main event style that the fans who are there for the super indie work rate kind of match will believe and buy into. And instead they went a totally different way, which was, the kind of Joe Nakamura thing that was more about star presence and aura and less about work rate. And I think it was kind of smart of them to go in a totally different divergent way. But I think if you now look at it, and there's a good chance that, Bobby Roode gets the title off of Nakamura here, who knows where they go in the future, having strong Oney Lorcan as a babyface guy who can handle the work rate side of things at the top level as a challenger for a heel Bobby Roode, I think makes perfect sense. So I can see that this is probably about pushing him forward more. It's hard for me to say, because I am such a big fucking fan of Biff Busick and have been for so long, to say this is the best he's looked. But I felt like this was a really solid performance from Oney Lorcan. But I can't say it's the best he's looked in NXT or it's the best he's looked in a while. Because to me, I'm Biff Busick is amazing. The guy is just such a great worker.
That Kalisto match you mentioned, he looked fantastic in it. Even though he was doing the job, but he dominated that match and it was a great match.
Yeah, so it's tough to judge him that way, because I just think he's a phenomenal performer through and through. Obviously he doesn't fit necessarily the Vince McMahon look, but to me he's got that just a really great believable look. I kind of liken him to an Arn Anderson. He looks like a mean stepdad. What I mean?
Yeah, I can buy that.
Yeah, so he's just he can definitely come across as a guy that you want on your TV as an ass kicker. And I thought, he looked good here. I loved the counter, as it looked like Almas was going for that hammerlock DDT. He rams him into the corner, and Lorcan is just such a snug, solid worker that he rams him into the corner, and it looks legit. He really fucking just hurt him. And it's just a counter of a DDT. And then, that big half and half off the top just looked great, and he gets the pin. And again, I think he's a guy that they would be very smart to push him to the top of the card, because I think a Oney Lorcan versus Roderick Strong feud is solid. I think an Oney Lorcan versus Bobby Roode feud is solid. He's definitely a good utility babyface for them to have, who can carry the work rate side of any match for them.
And the guy you can put into a tag team situation and make it click immediately,
Yeah, he's just 100% believable. So yeah, any match you throw him in and boom, it's a legitimate believable match just because of the intensity that he brings.
He's a guy who I liken to Terry Taylor, except he has a lot more intensity than Terry Taylor ever did. But he's a guy I feel like he could move up and down the card. He could challenge for the world title. He could work in a tag team program. He could work with a young guy and bring him up. He's actually a guy who's would be a very versatile hand in any territory, and from the 80s. And that's kind of what I feel like his job is here. Because we've seen him so far in so many different roles, right? We saw him in the tag team tournament. We saw him go over to SmackDown and have a great match. Even though his job was to lose and put over Kalisto, he did it in great fashion, got himself over. And now he got a big win, which was different and not expecting, since he's been doing so many damn jobs. But I didn't really care for this match. I think it falls onto Cien Almas, tell you the truth. I just don't think he's clicking here in NXT. It seemed like he was gaining some momentum as a heel, but I thought this match kind of missed the mark. I wasn't all that impressed. What about you?
I think that Lorcan looked good. The finish worked, but Almas, I don't know what the deal is with Almas, and especially having him come out with the mask here, I thought was weird. Just an odd pick, and I don't know if he's long for NXT. He might be maybe this time they cut it off at the pass, unlike last time where they put Sin Cara or Mystico on TV without putting him in developmental first and realizing it didn't work too late. I feel like they might actually cut bait on this guy earlier because they do have him in developmental and they see that it's not working, you know?
Yeah, we'll see. Then we got Liv Morgan and Aaliyah versus Peyton Royce and Billie Kay, the Australian Mean Girls. You know, one thing I'll say is those girls have, all four of them actually have their characters down. But I didn't really like this match at all. I thought it was actually bad, and they just didn't seem to click. And I felt like after watching Rachel Ellering, who has made shots on NXT and worked Wrestle Circus recently, thought she was better than all four of these girls who are in the ring right now, but she's not getting the opportunity that these four have. What are your thoughts here on the match and the girls in general?
Yeah, and all four of these girls, except for maybe Liv Morgan, because I don't know her background, have been wrestling much longer than Rachel Ellering. An actual friend of mine, a PWG regular for years and years, happened to train in the same class as Rachel Ellering at Lance Storm's school. And he told me, you know, multiple times that she was just an instant natural. Just super athletic, super strong, obviously very pretty. And just kind of got wrestling instantly as someone who just kind of grew up in the game and just picked it up with, you know, a moment's notice. Boom, she got it. So it's just so funny because, yeah, I mean, there were some people talking about, using this term recently, but I think Rachel Ellering could wrestle circles around all four of these girls. And it was on display here. I mean, I was excited. I like Liv Morgan. Again, you talk about they all got their characters pretty solid, but there's just nothing in ring. And it made me think of, there was a Progress 4-way early on. I think it was the second women's match that Progress ever did. And I talked about how, because they all had really solid characters and understood what they were doing, there wasn't a lot of psychology to the match, but you could understand the underlying story based on their characters without there being a story in the match. And I felt like this match was similar in that they all had their characters, but there was nothing to the match to like keep you enthralled. So it's kind of like if they had just stuck with their characters and hit some cool spots, it probably would have been a much better match. But they were doing first month of wrestling training level moves. And another part of this whole show is that the building is just feels dead silent. You can tell that it's huge and it's packed and the crowd is into it, but you can't hear anything from them. And it kind of like made this match really die on the vine.
I'm with you completely, totally with you on this one. But then it changes, the whole entire changes the dynamic right off the bat. We get DIY versus Tajiri and Tozawa. Tom Phillips is going bananas for Tajiri on commentary, where obviously he was a huge mark. Either he's really good friends with Regal or talks to Regal a lot, or he really grew up in the Regal Tajiri act and thought they were like incredible, because he was going bananas and it seemed legit. It wasn't like some make-believe bullshit carny stuff. He seemed like he was legitimate, having the time of his life seeing Tajiri back on the scene, huh?
Oh yeah, and it really made the match. But luckily there was one line from Tom Phillips that if he had dropped it at the incorrect spot in the match, it would have fucking just ruined this whole thing for me. But luckily enough, he kind of hit it early on, which was that it's that WWE talking points, because he said, "I remember Tajiri when I was young watching Sports Entertainment." And I'm just like, I'm sorry, but there was no fucking kid who's sitting at home when he's 11 and 12 saying, "Oh man, I love watching this Sports Entertainment."
Yeah, that's true. But man, I totally love this match. Go on. I mean, why'd you go back?
Oh, no, I was going to say, luckily he dropped it early enough that it didn't ruin the match. But yeah, I mean, the dynamic between Tozawa and Tajiri is just so perfect, because Tozawa is like, He really is like a modern-day Tajiri. He's all personality. Yeah. He's phenomenal in the ring. I mean, I think Tozawa is one of the underrated workers of our era, just for how really good he is in wrestling, especially milking drama. But his charisma is what gets him over and what people recognize from Tozawa. But, like, he has a, like, I would say a close to five-star classic match with Chris Hero. You know what I mean? And he has what Chris Hero considers his best match of his career is with Tozawa. So it's kind of, and that's when Tozawa was a young boy. So it's kind of hard to argue about Tozawa's in-ring prowess. But what gets him over the most is charisma. It's really similar with Tajiri. He's a guy who's a phenomenal worker, but his innate charisma that just transcends language barriers. And then, of course, you got DIY, who are just such a good team, who really balance each other out. I mean, Ciampa is all intensity. Gargano is the king of selling, and, you know, he doesn't have that intensity, but Ciampa isn't necessarily, you know, I mean, he's a good seller, but I think Gargano's very clearly a better seller. So,
yeah.
I mean, they just complement each other so well as opposites, and then meanwhile, you got a team on the other side that complement each other so well as the veteran young boy mirrors, and so you just end up with this amazing match. The crowd is super hot the whole way through. They love both guys, and yeah, I mean, or love all four guys, really, but especially the Japanese team, they're really into. And yeah, I just, Pete, I got to hear what you think about this match, though.
First off, I'm digging that DIY has matching trunks. So I'm glad they're committing to a tag team, okay? I loved Tajiri and Tozawa. And irony, everyone, I'm not a Dragon Gate boy guy. But, you know, Tozawa worked a lot of Texas before he... came back when, as a young boy, and he had he used to work ACW here in Austin a lot, and him and ACH had a tear down match, and
were you at that match?
Yeah,
I've actually seen that match on tape. That was amazing, because that was like really early on ACH.
That match was so good. Yeah. And then him and ACH became tag partners as the Young Dragons or some, I forget what they were. But yeah, and Tozawa had a freaking, you know, just tons of charisma and just had, he had it right off the bat. And, but yeah, and then I liked the Japanese chanting DIY. I thought that was really cool. I liked how they slowly built this. And, off air, I was talking to you about Ricochet and Ospreay and how they were, like, kind of jerking off, starting off slow, but, like, it was tongue-in-cheek. But here, they start off slow and it works. They make everything mean something. They start slow, and then everything, all the moves and the story all starts escalating, and it builds and builds and gets more and more exciting, and we're into a crescendo, man. I thought this was a 4.25-star match. I freaking loved it. DIY as really are coming across as a great, great blow. These two guys could be the ugliest blowjob babyface tag team I've ever seen, but it works because Gargano's so great at selling. Ciampa's offense is really crisp and beautiful, and they complement each other, but when they need to, and then Gargano has some like token spots that he uses that matter, and everything clicks. I mean, I would never have thought these guys would have been as good as they were as a tag team, but the man had to, after the great series with the Revival, and now seeing this match, man, they're freaking tremendous. What's your star rating you give this?
I could easily see like 3.5 to 3.75 for this thing.
Okay, I might have gotten a little high. I got so caught into this.
No, and I don't blame you. And it's always tough for me to star rate TV again. I'm not a big like rating TV stuff just because I worry about what's not in there, what can edit it out and all that. But I mean, the narrative of what we watched, I mean, I could definitely see it at a 4-star match from what's, you know, here actually, what you actually watch. But I mean, God damn, like, when you're talking about that, I just think about it, like, Ciampa was my guy. I loved Ciampa from the first time I saw him, and, I mean, to think, like, Gargano, a guy who I've never liked, and the way that they work together, as you said, when Ciampa is getting worked over, and he is selling, and he is, you know, backpedaling, it makes it feel even more special, because Gargano is the selling guy, and Ciampa is the fiery, intense offense guy. So when the roles switch, it feels like it's a big deal. And like when Gargano comes in fired up to save Ciampa, it feels like, oh man. And I think they've done such a great job as Revival has just disappeared. Since Revival lost the tag belts, they've really disappeared and been separated from DIY. This was a great match to put, you know, put DIY on TV, but also give them like a credible defense of the titles, but also like not have them involved with Revival in any way. So I just thought, genius, like really keep those acts separate so that if they do ever come back to it now, it'll feel special and it won't like feel like overkill, but it'll like be perfect. Like they just done such a great job in booking this team that, again, on paper, if you told me in 2012 that Ciampa and Gargano are going to be the tag team of the, you know, maybe the second best tag team in NXT, or, you know, a big deal even just as a tag team that you're going to enjoy their matches, I would have probably told you to fuck off. You know, that's stupid. Yeah. Ciampa's such a great singles guy. Gargano's lame and boring. But god damn, they've really put this stuff together. And it's just, it's almost like because they've spent so much time on the indies being the guys that everyone talked about should be signed, they really put everything together in a way where it's like, they just have everything that they need. They got all the tools and they are just knocking it out of the park. So yeah, I mean, this match was great. I'd love to see the full match unedited, but I mean, yeah, I could definitely see. I mean, what did you say you'd give it?
I gave it 4.25. I just got solely sucked into it and stuff.
I mean, I could see, you know, 3.75, 4-star, 4.25. What's the difference? You know, I could definitely see that rating because this match was a lot of fun and just great stuff from everybody.
Yeah, that was the best match on the card.
No question.
And stuff. Which leads us to another good match, Nia Jax versus Asuka. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, and what's funny, I mean, you just said it's a good match, but I heard people shitting on it, and I was going to come in here. I mean, it was Brian Alvarez shitting on it, but, you know, what does he know about fucking wrestling at this point?
Nothing.
But, yeah, I mean, I thought that Nia Jax as a monster was super credible. Cutting off the ring, working dominant on top the whole way through. I mean, she's so good. And Asuka, who plays this, you know, unbeatable monster champion in the company for so long, sells her ass off, flailing about, you know, using what attack she can get to get any kind of upper hand. You know,
and makes Nia even a bigger monster now.
Yes, exactly. And I'm just like, how can you shit on this match? This was worked so well from bell to bell. Asuka with her finesse technique, you know, her technical work. Because normally Asuka's all about that brute force, big strikes, taking girls apart, locks in the chicken wing when she feels like it and decimates her opponent. But this match, I mean, her strikes are nothing. So she's gotta ride this girl around. She's gotta work for big holds. I mean, the guillotine into the vertical suplex was an amazing spot from a girl as green as Nia Jax. I mean, with her body control, being able to take control of her opponent, looks like just a beast monster. And I'm just like, I don't know how anyone who says that they fucking talk about wrestling for a living could shit on this match, because this match was really fucking good, especially from both girls. Asuka working against character and Nia just stepping it up to the level of being like a really believable ass kicker.
I agree with you. I thought Asuka really making Jax a monster here. I really thought it was a fun dynamic because you usually see Asuka working on top for most of the match, but here she's fighting underneath against a monster. I like that dynamic, and I thought Asuka really made Nia here. I thought that was a great performance, and making Nia in a loss, and Asuka Nia took 90% of the match, but like slipped on the banana peel and just, you know, you believed it. Really well done. I thought it was like a 3.25-star match. I thought what they laid out was really, really smart work. Working around Nia Jax's limitations as a worker at this point, and made it a positive. Can't say the next thing about the next match. Joe versus Knack. I want to say, Shinsuke Nakamura, fuck you. You're embarrassing people, and having people still swoon over you is embarrassing. The guy is just, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's like, yeah, he used to be lazy in six mans and eight mans in New Japan, but man, he's even getting like lazy here in singles matches. We saw the one from Australia, which I thought was a really lazy match. And then we get here, and he's doing the same thing they did on the NXT special, and that's Joe doing really fun work on Nak's leg, and Nakamura just totally shit-canning it. Here, Joe, buy a clue. Work the arm this time, where at least the arm work won't go into the finish and totally fucking blow up the whole entire psychology of what's going on and the story you're telling. The story you're telling is you're fucking up Nak's leg, and Nakamura's just ignoring it, which I'm guessing the new code word for blowing off limb work is adrenaline in WWE speak, because that's what they're saying. Oh, Knox adrenaline pushing him through. No, it's a shitty ass selling. Blowing it off is pushing him through, and I thought this is. He opened up with that great match with Zayn. To me, Nakamura's getting. We're getting less and less back from him. Yeah, he's still charismatic, but man. It feels like he's kind of, I'm paying to see his ass in San Antonio on January, and I feel like I'm going to get let down. What do you think of the match?
I think it takes two to tango. Nakamura is fucking terrible here, and Joe is working his ass off, of course, but I just think it's funny because you hear people saying Joe's having a bad year this year. Joe's not that good. And like I hear a lot of people saying that. And it's funny. It's the opposite side of the coin of the AJ Styles thing. When AJ Styles went to New Japan, people were saying AJ Styles is one of the greatest wrestlers on planet Earth. And I said, if you had been watching NXT for the past 12 years, or if you had been watching TNA for the past 12 years, you would already know that AJ Styles has been one of the best wrestlers on Earth. If you had been watching TNA Joe for the past couple years, this is Joe. This is how he works now. Like, I think people were expecting ROH Joe, and he hasn't worked like that in a long fucking time. But lots of great psychology. Vicious fucking strikes. Leg focus like a motherfucker. Personality oozing through. Legitimate badass aura. I mean, the build of the guy, he looks like a fucking brick shithouse tank. He can move when he needs to, but he's not having Punk versus Joe, Punk versus Danielson style matches.
He's definitely a step below what he used to be.
But he's been like that for...
But his character work is, I think, a billion times better than when it was in old ROH, tell you the truth.
In ROH, when he had, the champ is here, and he had that epic long title run, like... There was a character there that was worked really well for what you needed to deliver on ROH. He had an aura and a presence, and he was the baddest man on the planet. Like, he was Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali of ROH, but it's also ROH. So it's like, you have to be work rate too. And now he can be a little bit more toned down and a little bit more presence, character, and aura, and he really is. So I get what you're... Like, he's definitely working... the best character work of his career now, but like he was a good character worker then, but it just wasn't the focus. But now it's like I said, if you've been paying attention to Joe for the past 10 years in TNA, this is how Joe works. And this is good shit. But when you do have a guy who doesn't put any legitimacy into selling all of this amazing work that Joe does, who just instantly shit cans the fucking knee, hits a couple, or shit cans all of the leg work, hits a couple token spots, and then, rides off in the sunset, and it just doesn't work for me, and it doesn't feel earned. I can't imagine that this monster, behemoth, king amongst men, is going to work over your leg for 20 minutes, and then you're going to hit him in the back of the head with a knee a couple times, and then just beat him? There's no fucking way. It just doesn't work for me.
It's that first leg thing he does. What is that, like some atomic knee crusher?
Yeah, when he
that
crosses...
That thing looks brutal.
I know, I saw that, and I'm like, he's done. He's never going to walk again. He just put his fucking tibia through his throat, like with this big just knee-mashing thing, and yeah, it's just, boom, he finishes it off. He's able to suplex, Joe and do all that. It's just... Again, I think that these two realistically are not a great match, and it's funny because they've worked together for so long. They trained together in the Inoki Dojo in LA.
Actually, on paper, you thought they'd have a great match because of the strong style and the shoot style backgrounds both guys have, but it fucking didn't work at all.
It hasn't worked in ring. It's been really dynamite on promos. The crowd loves it, but... Yeah. I mean, I said it at the time. I didn't like Zayn versus Nakamura that much. I know a lot of people really liked it. I know I got into an argument with Stephen Graham about it. But the thing is that that match to me was all sizzle and very minimal stake. And I mean, it's just gotten progressively worse with Nakamura. He's like turned even more into not like just turning it down. And I can see why people liked the Zayn versus Nakamura match, because it really was a big, you know, all-time epic encounter thing. But to me, I was just at that point, I was already so done with Nakamura that there was, I don't think there was any match that was going to like really excite me for him to do. And,
Nakamura is great Muda in WCW 94 when he come in for a shot or two or three and just be lazy. And yeah. So if he's there full time and he's lazy, and it's just like, wow.
But you know, that's NXT. I've been a big fan of NXT for a long time, but it's always not necessarily been like this, but it's always been similar to this, where parts of the card are really strong and other parts of the card just aren't. And right now the tag division is still super strong, and meanwhile the kind of main event scene is not where it's at.
Yeah, the girls division isn't hitting on us all cylinders either, so stock the cupboard and stuff. But hey, let's move over.
We got some big girls coming in too.
Who?
Heidi Lovelace, Kimberly, and Evie, and Nixon Newell are all on the way. So, yeah, that's gonna be a nice women's division with just those four girls.
Well, that's good then. But hey, let's look at CWF Worldwide, which is pretty much, it seemed like they shot some matches from a house show they ran, and it opens up with Joshua Cutshaw. Versus Nick Richards. I enjoyed this. I gave it like 2 and 3/4 stars. I liked Richards. I thought Richards' post bump was really sick. Cutshaw working with the reverse bear hug. So I'm liking the psychology working over the back after Richard takes a sick bump. I like the focus on Richards' back. Thought it was a fun match. The cutter came out of nowhere, where the, you know, you didn't really build to a finish. But I thought for an opener, I thought this was a pretty damn solid work from both guys that told the story. What about you?
Yeah, Richards looks good, selling and bumping his ass off, and then getting that out of nowhere, which I like. He's the Cobra Strike. He can come out of anywhere and get the pin, which is good. They're playing up kind of two sides of his character right now with the brawler, the kind of brawler trying to turn a new leaf as a technical worker, but he's still got that kill shot cutter. And one thing that stood out in this match was that Smith Garrett is a damn fine commentator, right?
Yeah, like, I totally agree. Yep, I didn't mention that, but I'm with you 100%. I'm like, damn, this guy's good.
Yeah, I was like, God, Smith Garrett's a pretty good color commentator. Cutshaw, really believable, dominant heel on top, especially with his size. So this match worked for me in just, you know, quick opener, as you said, just did its job. Can't argue with either of these guys' performance here.
Yeah, agreed. And then we got a Brad Attitude and Eric Royal promos. What'd you make of them?
Brad was fantastic, but I mean, the icing on the cake was Eric Royal with the tagline punchline on the end, and I just thought, yeah, this was a great. They're really good together for promos. I mean, this is a good little tag team.
Totally agree with you. What do you think of Keith Mack versus Eric Andrews? And why was Keith Mack working the match with a fanny pack?
I guess that's his gimmick. I don't understand. I guess he keeps party favors in there because he's the party starter. I don't know why.
Okay.
I do not get it. I loved Eric Andrews working over the eyes constantly, grabbing on his tights to get the pin. He's just a fucking asshole. I thought that Mac gets his shine going, but then he's too busy trying to play to the crowd and party and have fun, so Eric Royal takes over. And I just thought that they did a good job kind of, you know, just, again, it was just a quick boom, boom, tell this is this guy, this is this guy, these are their characters, bam, and this is like, you could pick up this show anywhere. That's what makes CWF Worldwide work so well too, is it's a show that you can pick up anywhere and you kind of instantly get it, because they treat almost every match like they have to establish the characters and you have to get who they are first, and then they go into the story. And even if it's a quick match, they make sure to get you that baseline character background first. But it's also a company that really rewards you if you're a longtime fan. So it's just kind of the best of both worlds. And I think this is a match that really encompasses that. Because if you've been watching, you get what Keith Mack is. And if you've been watching, you get what Eric Andrews is. But also, if this was your first time seeing both these guys, I think within the first couple of minutes, you're like, oh, okay, that guy's a fucking dick. And that guy just wants to have fun. Boom, boom, boom. In and out. Okay, that guy's a major asshole. Fuck him. Smith Garrett comes out, takes his shirt off. He's fired up and wants to fight. And Eric Andrews uses everything he can to kind of distract Garrett so that he can grab his title and get out of there, which is another just kind of sneaky little fucking asshole, you know, move where he just wants to sneak out the back door and not fight, which I thought was great.
Yeah, and it was a good, I thought it was a good fun, like make the crowd happy moment type of angle at the end post match. I will say I like Keith Mack. I just think he needs to show a little bit more charisma. Like, I don't know, we have a guy here in ACW who name's Reggie Lincoln, and he kind of does the same thing. He has the funny glasses, and he has a fanny pack, and so he has like a fro, and he has a little bit more charisma. And the fro, I think, is just what he needs to put him over the top. But I do like his character, and those characters always get over. It's almost like he's doing like No Way Jose Light, you know?
Yes, I can definitely see that, and. In here,
which is funny, since No Way Jose came from this territory, this area, too. Yeah.
And that's an archetypical character in Southern wrestling, you know, the big guy who likes to have fun. And
Jimmy Valiant, we've seen it for a while, Pez Watley did it, Iceman Parsons in World Class.
Junkyard Dog,
Coco Ware, it's just it's a lot of different ones. You're right. And it is a character that gets over. Oh, No Way Jose's over like gangbusters.
Yes.
In NXT, and I actually thought him and Rich Swann had a lot of upside as a tag team that they broke up too quickly. But hey, then we get the main event, which I thought was a lot of fun. Of Brad Attitude wearing his Sunday best, Eric Royal versus Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett. What'd you make of this?
I love Brad Attitude showing the wrist tape in his pocket when he comes out to the matches. I got my kick pads and my boots on. I got wrist tape even. Like, he's in his gear. I love that after the really hard-fought battle they had a couple weeks back, they do a big point here to show that Trevor just dominates Royal. Like, he just kicks Royal's ass throughout this match to begin with.
Yeah.
And that's just such a good job to show, like, Trevor is so fired up on wanting to beat Brad Attitude that he somehow has this like adrenaline dump that makes him able to just take it to Royal like he's nothing here. He's working over the arm. Another thing I think is amazing is Trevor does the arm manipulation, big stomp on the arm, and the crowd is like super into it. And it's just, I think it, actually I think I might be mixing it up with the Moments of Magic, but again, here, just like his technical work and focusing on the leg, looking for STFs.
There you go. He was working at the leg while everyone was on. Yeah.
He's on the leg here. Brad Attitude just comes in and breaks up holds and stomps on Trevor a little bit. But then as soon as Royal is on him again, he just picks the leg, boom, STF. And then, when Brad Attitude does come in, whenever like he chooses to, he's a big difference maker. And then when he does tag in, he's a natural. He hasn't been in the ring, but there's no ring rust. They talk about how this is his first time in CWF in over a year. And instantly no ring rust. The guy is just can show off. He does that slingshot senton like it's nothing for a guy his size. Super strong. And then Andrew Everett's just taking the big heat. And okay, so there was a DDT 4 in PWG. I think it was 2015 because they didn't do one in 2016. And it was the one where Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee ended up winning the tag team titles at the end of the night. And people really kind of panned that entire show as being really bad. Watching this tag match with the natural way that Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee work as a kind of Southern tag archetypical team, with Trevor as the hot tag muscle and Andrew Everett selling his ass off with some flashy spots here and there. Yep. And then thinking back about how that DDT 4 had three of these amazing matches from these two that I was just eating up with a spoon live, and just I was so amazingly into it. I just don't understand how people disliked that show. When you got three of these amazing Southern tag style matches on the same show, they were all different. They all had different stuff going on, but they were all that same archetype that just makes sense. Like, as I'm watching this match, I'm just having so much fun. Trevor comes back in, and then the most killer spot that I've ever seen Trevor pull off, like a hip toss into the cross arm breaker on Brad Attitude, was so cool. I was just like, that move was so slick, dude. And yeah, and then from there, Brad Attitude just ditches out instead of taking a soccer kick, and he just leaves to leave Eric Royal to get caught with the shooting star press from Everett in the pin. And I just thought it was so good, as the heel who's been running his mouth, he hightails it out of there instead of helping his buddy. And yeah, Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee are left standing tall as this triumphant team of best friends. But again, Everett has that CWF Rumble title match in his back pocket, even if these guys are best friends. And they did have what is still like solidly my match of the year earlier in the year. So I'm just like still excited to see these guys go at it again, because they're so good together as a tag team or wrestling each other.
You know, I'm with you. Yeah, and I absolutely love this finish. It just puts heat on Attitude. It also sets up Eric Royal could want a piece of Attitude, so it's just really great, because it makes it interesting when there's a lot more stuff, a lot more players on the board on the board that you can play with in this main event scene, based on that finish. You know, there's Attitude and Royal and Lee, Attitude and Lee. You know, Everett. With Royal, I mean, yeah, so many different things. But yeah, I really like this great Southern tag. You have 3.5 stars. Just a really fun show this week. Getting ready for Battlecade, and our boy Johnny Pease was there, and I know Papa Hales was having difficulty getting there, but I think he got there. God, I think I might fly out one year, one show this year, because I'm so excited about this product and this another fun worldwide. What do you think?
Oh yeah, and I'm right there with you. I've been thinking about how I'm going to get out there, because I want to go. I don't know if I want to wait all the way until Battlecade again next year. But even though that's the biggest show of the year, I'm like, what do I do? Because I really want to go too. So yeah, I thought this show was great. Blew right by. Shorter episode in general. It was about 40 minutes, 39 and change. But still, I mean, just the action, it flew by in a blink of an eye, as CWF always does. As people constantly complaining about how long Raw is, it's just too much. There's just too much WWE. I mean, hey, stop watching it. If Raw's too long, watch this. It's an hour. It flies by every week. It's very inviting. If you're just a casual fan, you could pick up episodes here and there. But if you do invest the time and watch it every week, you're going to really love it. So just, you know, go out of your way to watch CWF, guys.
Yeah, I was joking around with some guys in the chat that since I don't do the WWE show anymore, that allows me to go out and have some beers now. Because committing to watching that Raw every week, and even SmackDown and all the other stuff, was time-consuming, and people didn't realize how freaking time-consuming. Maybe because, and I wasn't a huge fan of Raw. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Raw. Never have been a huge fan of Raw and WWE in general. So I mean, I felt good to go into a bar and have the bartender happy to see me, because I haven't been there in a while. But hey, we're going to take a final break, and we'll be right back.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Left Is from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back, and we got a great treat on Christmas Eve. Was it Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
It was Christmas Eve, because I actually watched it as I fell asleep with sugar plums dancing in my dreams.
Yeah, we got a CWF Mid-Atlantic, what was it called?
Moments of Magic. It was a charity event for the Moments of Magic charity.
Which is super cool. too. It's total CWF Mid-Atlantic. It's total throwback to Continental, to world-class championship wrestling. World-class, back in the day, used to sell, do a bunch of those charities, and he'd do captain's matches, where a lot of it would be, they'd book maybe four people on the show, and someone would have to work twice. Like, they'd do a, they'd have a single, two singles, and then a tag match, and they'd do these little small shows for charities and stuff like this, and here, but it's such a staple to Southern wrestling for the fundraisers. Smoky Mountain Wrestling did it for a long time. I mean, it's just a staple, and high school gyms all over the South, and I think it was really neat to have it here. It opens up with Snooty Fox, the Dirty Daddy, Biggs, Keith Mack, and who was the fourth guy? Fifth guy?
Percy Davis.
Percy Davis, all right. Versus Ethan Sharp, Terrific Tony, him, Kane Justice, and who else?
Arlen Swartz.
Yep.
Yeah.
I really like this. I liked the action here. I thought I love Kane Justice throwing his hair tie at the Dirty Daddy. I thought Schwantz was great, kind of controlling the action. Biggs's hot tag was so awesome, but really short-lived, which I loved. That it was so awesome. Then boom, you were cutting off. Biggs with a Fez press on Terrific Tony. Just a super fun opener. 3 stars, all action. And they pushed some of the stories going into Battlecade. So they did a good job of weaving the storylines and the action to have a really fun opener. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. Hot, fast opener. Kane looks good working over Mac and taking cheap shots and this. And then, yeah, Biggs is just so good at being explosive. And he's a great big man worker, honestly. I mean, Aaron Biggs, I think, is a guy that should be getting a lot more praise as he throws his weight around really well.
Yep.
And has a lot of fire and intensity. Cuts off quick. Tony, I love Terrific Tony, thinks he won the match, but
yep,
it's not a rumble. And then he gets the big squish, the murder from Biggs, and it's over. And yeah, this is in and out quick, but you weave in the Battlecade stuff. Kane Justice still looks strong. Good stuff. Yeah, just great opener.
Yeah, and then we get Mecha Mercenary versus Zane Dawson. What do you think of this?
Dawson really outclasses Mecha Mercenary here as a big man worker. He can move, he can sell, he can, you know, kind of work on the top. Mech is a little sloppy with his spots here and there. He's not a great seller. Dawson is big and tough, but when he does eventually get to his wit's end, he's like, fuck this, and he goes to try to grab the belt to get the cheap shot, but he gets cut off with the Boss Man Slam. I thought Zane looked good here. Mech didn't look great, but he didn't look terrible. But this is not a match that I'm like really pimping at the end of the year for my match of the year list. It's not making it, unfortunately.
No, this is pretty much a straight up hoss fight. There's really no real wrestling moves here. They were just punches and kicks and just a slugfest. Nothing flashy. Just a good meat and potatoes. Two big boys having like a bull. Finding out who the big bull is here. And I thought it worked what it needed to do. Up next, we got Eric Royal versus Chet Sterling. How about this?
Eric Royal looked... Wait, hold on. You say Eric Royal versus Chet Sterling? Is that right?
Yeah, I thought so.
Yes, that is correct. I'm sorry. For some reason, I had this all switched up here. Anyways, sorry about that. Eric Royal's great from the start as he's shouting the yay, yay. And I love that taunt from him. His gear is not great. His gear makes him look a little bit bush league, unfortunately. And then, yeah, it's, oh wait, I think this was Smith Garrett and Eric Royal.
Was it?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, you're right. I wrote Chet Sterling down twice. My God. Okay. Yep. It is Smith Garrett.
Yeah, that's why.
And it's Smith Garrett's, make him look bush league, right?
No, it's Eric Royal's gear. I just don't like the, because it's a double strapped singlet, but he wears only one strap, and it's got a big circle on his belly that just kind of accentuates his stomach instead of making him look like he looks better in regular trunks.
I thought Smith Garrett's fake tie and glasses and hat made him look bush.
Well, I could see that too. But yeah, I loved Royal fucking around during the heat, and he grabbed the hat, and he's wearing the hat, and
yeah, I love the hat shtick, I really did.
Yeah, and I thought that they did a good job putting over Smith as a strongman here, as he's able to kind of stand toe to toe strength wise with Eric Royal, who's always put over as a big time monster. So I think they did a good job there. And then Royal gets the cheap distraction counter roll-up thing, and he grabs the rope. And I love that you can hear, as Eric Royal's leaving after that win, you can hear a kid in the crowd, a few kids in the crowd, and they're chanting cheater at him. And I just,
yeah.
This is what I'm looking for in my wrestling. I want kids that are upset that this man cheated, because he did, that motherfucker. So yeah, I thought that was great.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I gave it 2, 3, 4 stars. I liked Royal getting the heat early. The hatch stick, like you mentioned, I really liked. I liked Smith peppering in some hope spots, really well done. And, of course, I loved the cheating pin for Royal, and it was just a nice way. You know what? I like my heels to cheat to win. So there we go. And then Stets sets it up. Royal versus Everett for Battlecade. That sounds like a pretty damn good match. And then goes into Nick Richards versus Dave Dawson. What about this one, man?
I thought it was great that Dawson had a story and plan for the match, as he's got the fingers taped up and he's looking to gouge at the eyes and do a face claw the whole way through. Richards is such a good seller, and he connects to the crowd so well with his kind of fighting from underneath fire. The crowd really loves him. And then it really plays into it with Dave Dawson doing this extra underhanded tactic that he's really playing up the entire match of attacking the eyes and the face that way. It's just such good, like, basic heat that's almost his entire offense. And then, again, as I talked about earlier, you're playing into Nick Richards as this kind of trying to be more technical as he gets the win with an O'Connor roll with a bridge, and he gets jumped after the bell, and the sandwich squad are out to save the day for him. And I thought this did a great job of putting over Nick Richards super strong as an underdog babyface and with a really deplorable heel here. So that's just great old school work here to set up for the big matches at Battlecade.
Yeah, what I also liked about this match is, well, I'll just go over everything. I liked Richard Shine. I thought this was a really good story where Richards was trying to use wrestling holds to keep Dave Dawson down, but then he got suckered into brawling, which was more of Dawson's strength, and I liked how Richards brawling allowed Dave Dawson to get the advantage. I liked how Richard's instincts are the brawl, even though he's trying to work a more technical style. And I liked how the commentary was explaining that as the narrative of the story. I thought this was a good, fun bout, another 3-star match. I really liked what they did here, and I liked the narrative. And I liked how I'm always a big fan of when the commentary meshes with the story that's going on in the ring, and they did it here beautifully. Which leads us to the next match, which is, oh yeah, and then we get a post-match. I liked of the Dawson's attacking, and the sandwich squad comes out for the save, setting up for future stuff there. And then we got Ace Perry versus Chet Sterling. What are your thoughts here?
I love Perry's swagger. The guy is just a great, he's got so much attitude. He's a cocky little asshole. And he takes every underhanded cheap shot he can. Anytime there's a rope break, he's looking for kicks. He bails to the floor whenever he can. I mean, he got busted before the match with Nux in his tights. This guy is a heel's heel. I love it. I just love it. Chet is a really solid go-go-go kind of worker, but realistically, he needs to learn to put matches together with a little bit more focus. I love Tripp distracting the ref and getting the cheap shot at the same time to set up some more heat in the match. Then Perry eventually gets a chain, goes for a cheap shot, but Chet just won't stay down, not even with the cheap shot with the chain. But then just the blockbuster kind of out of nowhere in the pin. And this is a match where I think it could have used a little bit more setup to the finish. I think Nick Richards has got that cutter. I think you want to kind of limit it to one guy who's got that flashbang knockout, killer instinct, one hit finish move. I don't think you want to have two guys that are kind of doing the same thing. So that's my only takeaway here, is that honestly, I think Trent Sterling, while good, is not quite there great with his psychology yet.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match. I give it 2.5 stars, but I'm with you on everything you said. I know no disagreements there, which leads us to the main event of Trevor Lee versus Trip Cassidy. What about this bad boy?
Again, I just think that Trevor from the start fired up, just really taking it to Trip Cassidy. Just a good, like, strong on the top babyface shine from Trevor. Then he does get cut off, and then you know kind of transition to what I think might be Trevor's strongest suit, which is selling and getting major sympathy from the crowd. Trip with just old school neck cranks, working over the head and neck area, and this is where Trevor grabs the arm, manipulates the joint, sets up for the big stomp, and this is where it just goes to show Trevor is the man in this company, and he's retrained this Southern indie crowd in 2016 to look at something that's a very World of Sport British inspired attack as being a big hope spot for a comeback. And it just goes to show that you can really train, you can really educate a crowd to be into anything, especially if you've got a guy with as much charisma and as much kind of connection to the crowd as Trevor has. That, like, you can train any crowd to believe in anything. It's kind of that old argument where they said you could get Mark Henry over using the headlock as a finishing hold if you just, you know, booked it properly. And this is the same thing with Trevor here. I mean, the guy is using World of Sport style offense to what you would think of as, you know, the kind of lowest of not lowest of the low, but one of the more less sophisticated wrestling crowds in the South, and it's over. You know, and it doesn't matter. It's not about where you're at, the demographics, anything. It's about what you do in that ring and you make it work. Trevor gets a strong win with a submission at the end and cuts a post-match promo that's just big with emotion, selling the big show great. And it's why Trevor, people like to throw the word around, and a lot of times I don't necessarily 100% agree with it. But in this match, Trevor shows why he's an ace. And in this company, he most certainly is an ace with this post-match promo.
Yeah, I'm with you. I give it 3.25 stars. I like the brawling on the outside to start to make it a little different. I thought Cassidy throws this nice running knee that looked just absolutely wicked in this match. Finally, you know, of course, Lee eventually hurts the arm and starts working, and you know, that sets up the narrative and the story, which leads us to the great finish. You know, Trevor Lee, and just having, you know, this was like a 12-minute match, and honestly, it could have gone another 8 minutes. I would have been perfectly happy. But man, really fun match, and a really good top-to-bottom show with really consistent, nothing bad on the show, real consistent. It didn't really have any peaks or valleys, really. I thought everything was right on about. I think it would have been hard as hell to pick a match of the night, because I thought everything worked on paper, you know, and everything was executed really well.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's the thing about these CWF shows, is that even if they're not 4 or 5 star matches, it's like everything is a solid upper 3 star, where it is like, how do you complain about 5 and 6 3, 3.5 3 3/4 star matches, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just good stuff, man. That's This Week in Wrestling. Timothy, you got anything you got to plug, buddy?
That List podcast, Psychology is Dead, on the same feed here. So if you're listening to this, you probably already heard it. And that's really it. Just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, man. Follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Next week, we'll be back with, we're going to be covering the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom show. So, we'll have some fresh takes, probably different than what you'll probably hear all over the internet, or it might be the same. We'll see. Hopefully the show's good, because we know we'll be long. So are you looking forward to the Wrestle Kingdom, though?
I am, and I am looking forward to us talking about it. It's kind of funny because, I mean, we haven't really reviewed a New Japan show almost all year. And, I mean, last year we covered quite a few New Japan shows, so it's kind of interesting. I mean, I think the last New Japan show that we reviewed was actually Wrestle Kingdom this year. So
No.
What have we reviewed since?
We did some G1s.
Oh, we did cover some G1s. You know what I forgot? Because we were
we did the G1s. We did the New Japan.
The best of the junior. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that. I just think none of a lot of the shows just weren't. You know, by the time we were recording, it just was too late at that point. It didn't feel fresh at that, and a lot of the shows just seemed solid. Nothing like I can't miss type of thing. You know.
That's true.
This feels like on paper, even though some of the mat, like I don't care about Shibata Goto. I'm interested in Omega and Naito, and Omega and Okada. I'm interested in Naito and Tanahashi. I'm interested in where they're going. New Japan usually after this show kind of shows its hand, teases its hand a little bit on where it's going, and then usually makes a big left turn or right turn. So I'm really curious to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited for the show. It's a big deal, and there's definitely going to be at least one or two good matches. I mean, we've got Kama Itachi, or whatever his name is now, against Kushida, which I don't think can disappoint. So, got that. I think Omega and Okada can definitely be solid. So, it's definitely an exciting show to get into.
Yeah, I mean, Kushida had one of the best junior runs last year of modern times, and really, New Japan has had from the light heavyweight title in a long time. So, I'm expecting him to continue 2017 on a strong note with a hell of a match. So, yeah, it should be a lot of interesting stuff. So, a lot of big names on the show, and we might actually find out where Kyle O'Reilly stands on his contract talks, the booking of the show. So, hey, tune in next week, folks, and have a great one. Have a great new year.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh my perceptions of death.